We're going to cover two reasons tonight. We're going to cover reason number 12 and reason number 13. And so reason number 12 finishes a section in the book that we were working on last week. Reason number 12 is this. The Jewish Bible warned against Jesus. How so? Now, when he says Jewish Bible, he means the Tanakh. The answer is Deuteronomy chapter 13. And so we'll go look at this text. It shouldn't be a new text to anyone here. But we'll go look at the text and see what the objections are that are coming out of Deuteronomy 13 and how it has been construed to speak directly of our Master. So Deuteronomy 13 says this: if a prophet or a dreamer of dreams arises among you and gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes true concerning which he spoke to you, saying, let us go after other gods whom you have not known, and let us serve them, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or dreamer of dreams, for the Lord your God is testing you to find out if you love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul. You shall follow the Lord your God and fear him, and you shall keep his commandments and listen to his voice and serve him and cling to him. But that prophet or that dreamer of dreams shall be put to death, because he has counseled rebellion against the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of slavery, to seduce you from the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk, that is the Torah. So you shall purge the evil from among you. If your brother, your mother's son, your daughter, or the wife you cherish, or your friend, who is your own soul, entice you secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods, whom neither you nor your fathers have known, or the gods of the peoples who are around you, near you or far from you, from one end of the earth to the other end, you shall not yield to him or listen to him. Your eyes shall not pity him, nor shall you spare or conceal him, but you shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be first against him to put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people. So shall you stone him to death, but because he has sought to seduce you from the Lord your God, who brought you out from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. All right, so this is the passage of which Asher Norman says the Jewish Bible warned against Jesus. And he says the Torah specifically warned that God will test the Jewish people by sending a prophet or a dreamer of dreams who will produce a sign or a wonder which he will use to turn the Jewish people to gods you did not know. And Jesus appears to be the subject of this admonition. So there's a couple charges here. First of all, that it's a prophet of some sort, and Yeshua of Nazareth certainly falls into that category, that this prophet seduces the people and convinces them to, actually there's two things, one, to follow after gods, false gods, or gods that you didn't know. And the other one, and these are not, it doesn't have to be both, it can be either or. The other one is that he has counseled you to walk away from God rather than keeping his commandments, listening to his voice, and serving him and clinging to him. Instead, he's seduced you from the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk. So, in other words, to break the Torah, not to keep the Torah. So Asher Norman, from his perspective, as he laid out for us last week, he says Trinitarianism is a belief in three gods: the Father God, the Son God, and the Spirit God, three different gods. And therefore, if Jesus comes and he does signs, miracles, or wonders, and then leads us to follow after other gods, these other gods, himself being one of them, then he falls into this category that Deuteronomy 13 was warning us about. On the other hand, we could also say, if this Messiah comes, performs signs and wonders, this prophet comes and performs signs and wonders, and then counsels us not to keep the commandments of the Torah, leads the Jewish people into apostasy, then also he falls into this category. And so the main thrust, the main intent of Deuteronomy 13 is to say that we don't rely on signs and wonders as proof of God's, as validation that a prophet is indeed a prophet of the Lord. And so then the question comes to us and says, well, is this Jesus? Is this describing Jesus? And I hope we're all comfortable with what we covered in terms of Christology, Christology questions last week, because it's my contention that even the belief in a Trinitarian formulation of Christology and an explanation of God is not, should not be construed to be belief in other gods. Rather, Trinitarianism, though Asher Norman, in his opinion, it represents belief in other gods. Rather, Trinitarianism, as the Church Fathers intended it, was not to introduce other deities. And it wasn't even to exalt Yeshua into a position of another deity beside the Lord. Rather, it was an attempt to defend monotheism, to hold monotheism together in view of the high Christology espoused by the apostles. So what I'm saying is, the apostles give us this very high Christology, the divinity of Yeshua, the divine nature of Yeshua. And so the danger that the Church Fathers recognized was that this could become very quickly a polytheistic notion where you had a different gods, where there's God the Father and God the Son, two different gods. And so the Church Fathers wanted to defend the idea of monotheism, that no, there's not different gods. There's only one God, and these are different aspects of his singular being. Now, I'm personally think that there are healthier ways that they might have struck upon to express this divine mystery, and we talked about some of those last week. But if a high Christology, the divinity of Yeshua, or the Trinity is indeed understood as other gods, then perhaps Yeshua falls into this category. Yet at the same time, it is not the teaching of Yeshua that we're even discussing here. We're discussing the interpretations of the Church Fathers, not the teachings of Yeshua in the Gospel. In fact, Asher Norman could point us to lots of passages in the Gospel where our Master directs us to the worship of the one God, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And it's clear from reading the Gospels that Jesus was not trying to hedge in on that territory or something like that. He wasn't trying to take over or anything like this. So then the other question is that of Torah observance. If a prophet appears and does signs and wonders and miracles and then says, break the Sabbath, or he appears and does signs and wonders and miracles and he says, commit adultery, then you can pick whatever commandment. That disqualifies him. Not only does it disqualify him from being a prophet, but it puts him into this particular category of false prophet, false teacher, who is to be shunned. And so this is not a problem for us. I understand why it's a problem for Asher Norman. It's not a problem for us because we understand that our Master did not teach against the Torah. Rather, he says, don't think that. Don't think that I've come to abolish the Torah. And he upheld the Torah. However, Christian interpretation has consistently for the last 2,000 years presented the opposite and reinterpreted his teachings to mean that he came to cancel the Torah. This, as we've mentioned before in this class, is a serious problem. this is a serious problem, because essentially the Jesus that has been presented to Judaism for most of history does then fall into this category described here in Deuteronomy 13 and should be rejected. So biblically, a Jewish person who reads Deuteronomy 13 and believes it, and then hears about Jesus who walked on water and healed the sick and made the lame to walk, and yet taught the Jewish people, don't keep the Torah. You're not under the Torah anymore. The thinking Jewish person should say, ah, bingo, it's right here. God is testing me. And the correct biblical and the thing that that person should do to be obedient to God would be to reject the message of the gospel. So you see that I know this is redundant because we've talked about it before, but Asher Norman's bringing it up again. He's being redundant. And it's a critical matter. In fact, as I mentioned the last time we were studying this material, this particular question, I believe that this is our reason for existence, the reason for Beth Emanuel's existence and congregations like us and this entire segment of Christianity, is in order to exonerate the good name of our Master. And I believe that's a worthy reason for existence in itself. Because this is of such a critical nature, such a critical matter, that in fact, if we're wrong about this, then all of Christendom is wrong, and the New Testament should be quickly torn out of our Bibles. Don't worry, we're not wrong about this. But it's a grave responsibility that we have to take seriously. Okay, so this is that would be my answer to reason number 12. His conclusion on reason number 12 is, whenever a Jew believes in Jesus and becomes a Christian, he fails God's test. A Jew who worships Jesus, a man, as a deity, has committed idolatry. So that's my answer. That's his conclusion. That would be my answer to those allegations for reason number 12. Any questions on reason number 12, or thoughts or comments that you'd like to contribute? Yes?
I've been reading some of the mystic stuff, like the Zohar and...
How old are you?
I'm
all right, good.
And some of the Jews are good-naturedly poking fun at themselves. They say, well, if the Christians are being ridiculed for making a Trinity, maybe some of us should be ridiculed because we've made God into 10.
Yeah, I mentioned that last week. Exactly. That's, yeah. No, but that's, I'm glad you brought it up. I'm very glad you brought it up because you're driving home that point for us. Exactly. What I was saying last week is that if the best route to understanding high Christology, to understanding the divine nature of our Messiah, would be to go through traditional mystical Jewish thought, and we see, as you know, there's a great affinity with the thought of the New Testament. Kevin is working on translating some fabulous material for me. he's taking the next step in the Levertov universe, and has taken on religious ideas of the Hasidim, which is a much larger work than Love in the Messianic Age. But it's all in German. It's locked up in the German language. And Kevin is attempting to free it.
162 pages. It'll be done by the
weekend. Great.
Wow.
All right. So we have some very interesting material, I think, in reason number 13. As we move on to reason number 13, unfortunately, in reason number 13, he's only going to give us a couple texts as samples, but if we finish all 26 reasons, he's created an appendix for us with many additional texts that go under reason number 13 that we can go and study one at a time. But tonight we'll just do the ones that he brings up in the chapter. So here's reason number 13. that Jews don't believe in Jesus. The authors of the Christian Bible, that is the New Testament, employed a number of deceptive techniques to shoehorn Jesus into the text. In other words, to shoehorn Jesus, to impose Jesus onto the text of the Old Testament. So what he's talking about is the proof texts. You know what I mean by proof texts? The proof texts that the apostles use in the writing of the New Testament. Because the apostles fully understand that they don't see themselves as writing a new Bible or something like that. Rather, to the apostles, the Bible is the Tanakh. It is the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. And so, as they are teaching about Yeshua, they're looking for material to support their teachings from the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. Very much the same way that the sages writing the Mishnah and the Talmud are not writing a new Bible. That's not what's in their head. Instead, they are just bringing the teachings of Judaism and supplying proofs from the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. Here's how he says the Christians, in fact, now we're talking about the apostles, misappropriated several texts in order to prove the messiahship of Jesus of Nazareth. Number one, messianic prophecies were invented and then attributed to Jesus. Number two, non-messianic prophecies were turned into messianic prophecies. So, number two would be, it's a prophecy that has nothing to do with Messiah that the apostles took out of context and reapplied to Messiah. We looked at one of those last week. Remember, out of Egypt I called my son? All right. Number three, verses in the Jewish Bible were taken out of context in the Christian Bible. How is that different? That's the same as... Two and three are pretty much the same. Okay, number four. Verses in the Jewish Bible were mistranslated. Words and phrases were invented and tenses were altered. So we're going to take a look at that tonight. You might have noticed this yourself if you've ever been reading the New Testament and you see a verse that's a quotation and then you look back at the actual quotation in the Tanakh and you say, well, that's a little different. That doesn't read the same. You might have noticed this process yourself. So we'll talk about that a little bit tonight. And then number five, verses in the Jewish Bible were misappropriated to support messianic claims about Jesus, which sounds...
Isn't that number two and three?
Yeah. Okay, so he's only got three reasons here. But...
looks better.
Yeah, there's probably a subtle differences in what he's looking at. We're not going to get into such subtleties tonight. Instead, we'll take some of these on. But first, I want to just stop and talk about this from a large... Let's back up from any specific texts or anything for a moment and just talk about the methodology that he is now going to begin employing. We haven't seen a lot of this yet, but at this point... At least for this lesson, he's beginning to rely on the work of Isaac Troche. Now, Isaac Troche was a famous anti-missionary from, I don't know, maybe the 17th century or the 16th century, who wrote the book in Judaism about... It was Reasons Jews Don't Believe in Jesus of the 16th century or whatever year it was. I think it might have been the 17th century or 16th century. I really don't know. The book was called Chizuk Emunah, Faith Strengthened. And the principal mode of argument that Isaac Troche adopted was to take the proof texts of the New Testament and show how they were, you know, go through all five of these things, used out of context, misapplied, that's not what it originally meant, that's not what it says in the Hebrew, it's been the syntax, the grammar has been fiddled with, that's not what that, you know, that was his approach, Isaac Trocki. And so this book of his, Faith Strengthened, became the manual throughout Judaism for answering missionaries and refuting the gospel. And it continues to this day to be the primary, even though it's like it's been reprinted by in many different books, it's still the mother source for a lot of objections to the gospel. But there's a very interesting problem with Isaac Trocki's work. Oh, I should tell you, Rabbi Lichtenstein, Yechiel Tzvi Lichtenstein, one of his major goals in life was to answer everything Isaac Trocki said. And so he wrote a book called True Faith Strengthened. True Faith Strengthened. Which we have acquired at First Fruits of Zion and done an initial translation of, at least the first part of it. It was a book in three volumes. We have the first volume, and I'm not sure he ever got the second two written before his death. But at any rate, we have True Faith Strengthened. But let me just tell you what the real issue with Isaac Trocki is. The problem with Isaac Trocki is that he, and the reason he can do the stuff he does and say the things he says is that he is a Karaite. He was a Karaite Jew. What's a Karaite Jew? A Karaite Jew is someone who goes to a Messianic congregation. Now, a Karaite Jew is... A Karaite Jew is someone who rejects the rabbis. He rejects rabbinic interpretation. Karaites reject the Talmud. They reject the Mishnah. They reject the Pharisaic method of interpretation of the scripture. They reject rabbinic exegesis. They reject the Midrashic method. So, Karaites are strict biblical literalists. Sola scriptura is the Karaite approach. And from a Karaite approach, Isaac Trocki is very accurate. You know, the things he says are pretty much right on the money. For example, when it says, "Out of Egypt I called my son," Isaac Trocki would say, that has nothing to do with Jesus, with Messiah, with anything in the future at all. That's God talking about taking the children of Israel out of Egypt. That's literally what it means. And to use it to say something else is a completely misappropriation. And that's true. It's a complete misappropriation. It's using it out of context. That's not what it meant in its original context. So it's absolutely true. So how do you deal with Isaac Trocki? How do you answer Isaac Trocki? Well, it's very simple. It's very, very simple. It comes down to this. The apostles were not Karaites. The apostles followed the rabbinic method. They used rabbinic exegesis. They had more affinity with the Pharisees, who accepted an oral tradition and traditional methods of interpreting the Bible, than they did with the Sadducees, who rejected those sorts of methods of interpreting the Bible. So it really comes down to a question of hermeneutics here. Hermeneutics being how you interpret Scripture. According to Isaac Trocki's rules of hermeneutics, a great deal of the New Testament is out of is illegitimate, using the scriptures illegitimately. But according to greater Judaism, traditional Judaism, what you might call Orthodox Jewish interpretation, the New Testament works very well. The sages work very well. Our master, the apostles, it all flows very nicely in a Midrashic method and a Talmudic method of interpreting the scriptures. So do you begin to see the rub here? The deal is, it's always attractive for Christians for us to say the rabbis were full of crap. Right. That's where, you know, that's always the attractive thing. But then when it comes down to understanding, interpreting, and defending our own scriptures, we are up a creek without them. And so that's kind of, for me, this has been the ideological battle that has, resulted in this congregation, I guess, in trying to navigate this, to navigate these poles, because throwing out the rabbis and playing the rabbis are evil game, ultimately is sawing off the branch that you're sitting on. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so let's take a look at a little bit of this work here. Asher Norman, following Troche, points out this text in Isaiah 7:14. You might want to look it up. You can find it in Matthew chapter 1, verse 22, and in Isaiah 7:14. I have them here on the sheet for you, but go to Isaiah 7, okay? There is no messianic prophecy of a virgin birth in the Jewish Bible.